In hemology, the type of metal used in a spike is important, as is the positioning of that spike on the body. For instance, steel spikes take physical allomantic powers, the ability to burn pewter, tin, steel, or iron, and bestow them upon the person receiving the spike. Which of these four is granted, however, depends on where the spike is placed. Spikes made from other metals steal ferrochemical abilities. For example, all of the original inquisitors were given a pewter spike, which, after first being pounded through the body of a ferrochemist, gave the inquisitor the ability to store up healing power, though they couldn't do so as quickly as a real ferrochemist, as per the law of hemologic decay. This obviously is where the inquisitors got their infamous ability to recover from wounds quickly, and was also why they needed to rest so much. 36.
"You shouldn't have gone in," Set said flatly.
Elland raised an eyebrow, riding his stallion through the center of his camp. Tyndall had taught him that it was good to be seen by one's people, especially in situations where he could control the way he was perceived. He happened to agree with this particular lesson, and so he rode, wearing a black cloak to mask the ashes' smudges, making certain his soldiers knew he was among them. Set rode with him, tied into his specially made saddle.
"You think I put myself in too much danger by entering the city?"
Elland asked, nodding to a group of soldiers who had paused in their morning labors to salute him.
"No," Set said. "We both know that I don't give a damn whether you live or die, boy. Besides, you're Mistborn. You could have gotten out if things turned dangerous."
"Why then?" Elland asked. "Why was it a mistake?"
"Because," Set said, "you met the people inside. You talked with them, danced among them. Hell, boy, can't you see why that's such a problem? When the time comes to attack, you'll worry about people you're going to hurt."
Elland rode in silence for a moment. The morning mists were a normal thing to him now. They obscured the camp, masking its size. Even to his tin-enhanced eyes, distant tents became silhouetted lumps. It was as if he rode through some mythical world, a place of muffled shadows and distant noises. Had it been a mistake for him to enter the city? Perhaps. Elland knew the theories Set spoke of. He understood how important it was for a general to view his enemies not as individuals but as numbers, obstacles.
"I'm glad for my choice," Elland said.
"I know," Set said, scratching at his thick beard. "That's what frustrates me, to be honest. You're a compassionate man. That's a weakness. But it isn't the real problem. The problem is your inability to deal with your own compassion."
Elland raised an eyebrow.
"You should know better than to let yourself grow attached to your enemy, Elland," Set said. "You should have known how you would react, and planned so that you could avoid this very situation. Hell, boy, every leader has weaknesses. The ones who win are the ones who learn how to smother those weaknesses, not give them fuel."
When Elland didn't respond to that, Set simply sighed.
"All right, then, let's talk about the siege. The engineers have blocked off several streams that lead into the city, but they don't think those are the primary sources of water."
"They weren't," Elland said. "Vin has located 6 main wells within the city itself."
"We should poison them," Set said.
Elland fell silent. The two halves of him still warred inside. The man he had been just wanted to protect as many people as possible. The man he was becoming, however, was more realistic. It knew that sometimes he had to kill, or at least discomfort, in order to save.
"Very well," Elland said. "I'll have Vin do it tonight. And I'll have her leave a message written on the wells saying what we've done."
"What good will that do?" Set asked, frowning.
"I don't want to kill the people, Set," Elland said. "I want to worry them. This way they'll go to Yeoman for water. With the entire city making demands, he should go through the water supply in his storage cache pretty quickly."
Set grunted.
He seemed pleased, however, that Elland had taken his suggestion. "And the surrounding villages?"
"Feel free to bully them," Elland said. "Organize a force of 10,000 and send them out to harass, but not kill. I want Yeoman's spies in the area to send him worried notes about his kingdom collapsing."
"You're trying to play this halfway, lad," Set said. "Eventually you'll have to choose. If Yeoman doesn't surrender, you'll have to attack."
Elland reined in his horse outside the command tent.
"I know," he said softly.
Set snorted, but he fell silent as servants came out of the tent to unstrap him from the saddle. As they started, however, the earth began to tremble. Elland cursed, struggling to maintain control of his horse as it grew skittish. The shaking rattled tents, knocking poles free and collapsing a couple of them, and Elland heard the clang of metal as cups, swords, and other items were knocked to the ground. Eventually, the rumbling subsided, and he glanced to the side, checking on Set. The man had managed to keep control of his mount, though one of his useless legs swung free from the saddle, and he looked as if he was about to fall off. His servants rushed to his side to help.
"Damn, things are growing more and more frequent," Set said.
Elland calmed his horse, which stood puffing in the mists. Around the camp, men cursed and yelled, dealing with the aftermath of the earthquake. They were indeed growing more frequent. The last one had only been a few weeks before. Earthquakes weren't supposed to be common in the Final Empire. During his youth, he'd never heard of one happening in the Inner Dominances. He sighed, climbing from his horse and handing the beast off to an aide, then followed Set into the command tent. The servants sat Set in a chair, then retreated, leaving the two of them alone. Set glanced up at Elland, looking troubled.
"Did that fool Ham tell you about the news from Luthadel?"
"Or the lack of it?" Elland asked, sighing.
"Yes."
Not a peep had come from the capital city, let alone the supplies Elland had ordered brought down the canal.
"We don't have that much time, Elland," Set said quietly. "A few months at most. Time enough to weaken Yeoman's resolve, perhaps make his people get so thirsty that they begin to look forward to invasion. But if we don't get resupplied, there's no way we'll be able to maintain this siege."
Elland glanced at the older man. Set sat in his chair with an arrogant expression, looking back at Elland, meeting his eyes. So much about what the crippled man did was about posturing. Set had lost the use of his legs to disease long ago, and he couldn't intimidate people physically, so he had to find other ways to make himself threatening. Set knew how to hit where it hurt. He could pick at the very faults that bothered people and exploit their virtues in ways that Elland had rarely seen even accomplished soothers manage. And he did all this while covering up a heart that Elland suspected was far softer than Set would ever admit. He seemed particularly on edge this day, as if worried about something, something important to him, something he'd been forced to leave behind, perhaps?
"She'll be all right, Set," Elland said. "Nothing will happen to Alrianne while she's with Sazed and Breeze."
Set snorted, waving an indifferent hand, though he did look away.
"I'm better off without the damn fool of a girl around. Let that soother have her, I say. Anyway, we're not talking about me, we're talking about you and this siege."
"Your points have been noted, Set," Elland said. "We will attack if I deem it necessary."
As he spoke, the tent flaps parted and Ham sauntered in, accompanied by a figure Elland hadn't seen in several weeks, at least not out of bed.
"Demu,"
Elland said, approaching the general.
"You're up and about."
"Barely, Your Majesty," Demu said.
He did still look pale.
"However, I have recovered enough strength to move around a bit."
"The others?" Elland asked.
Ham nodded.
"Mostly up and about as well. Demu is among the last batch. A few more days and the army will be back to full strength."
Minus those who died, Elland thought. Set eyed Demu.
"Most of the men recovered weeks ago. A bit weaker in the constitution than one might suspect, eh, Demu?" That's what I've been hearing, at least.
Damu blushed. Elland frowned at this.
What?
It is nothing, Your Majesty, Damu said.
It's never nothing in my camp, Damu, Elland said. What am I missing?
Ham sighed, pulling over a chair. He sat on it backward, resting his muscular arms across its back.
It's just a rumor moving through the camp, El.
Soldiers, Set said. They're all the same. Superstitious as housewives.
Ham nodded.
Some of them have gotten it into their heads that the men who got sick from the mists were being punished.
Punished? Elland asked. For what?
Lack of faith, Your Majesty, Damu said.
Nonsense, Elland said. We all know that the mists struck randomly.
The others shared looks, and Elland had to pause and reconsider.
No, the strikes weren't random. At least the statistics surrounding them weren't.
Regardless, he said, deciding to change the subject. What are your daily reports?
The three men took turns talking about their various duties in the bivouac. Ham saw to morale and training, Damu to supplies and camp duties, Set to tactics and patrols. Elland stood with hands clasped behind his back, listening to the reports, but only with half an ear. They weren't much different from the previous day, though it was good to see Damu back at his duties. He was far more efficient than his assistants. As they talked, Elland's mind wandered. The siege was going fairly well, but a part of him, the part trained by Set and Tyndall, chafed at the waiting game. He might just be able to take the city straight out. He had Kolos, and all accounts said that his troops were far more experienced than those inside of Fadrix. The rock formations would provide cover for the defenders, but Elland wasn't in so bad a position that he couldn't win. But doing so would cost many, many lives. That was the step he balked at, the last step that would take him from defender to aggressor, from protector to conqueror. And he was frustrated at his own hesitation. There was another reason going into the city had been bad for Elland. It had been better for Elland to think of Yeoman as an evil tyrant, a corrupt obligator, loyal to the Lord Ruler. Now, unfortunately, he knew Yeoman to be a reasonable man, and one with very good arguments. In a way, his indictment of Elland was true. Elland was a hypocrite. He spoke of democracy, yet he had taken his throne by force. It was what the people had needed from him, he believed. But it did make him a hypocrite. Still, by that same logic, he knew he should send Vin to assassinate Yeoman. But could Elland order the death of a man who had done nothing wrong besides getting in his way? Assassinating the obligator seemed as twisted an action as sending his Kolos to attack the city. Set is right, Elland thought. I'm trying to play both sides on this one. For a moment, while talking to Teldon during the ball, he had felt so sure of himself. And in truth, he still believed what he'd claimed. Elland wasn't the Lord Ruler. He did give his people more freedom and more justice. However, he realized that this siege could tip the balance between who he was and who he feared he would become. Could he really justify invading Fadrix, slaughtering its armies and pillaging its resources, all ostensibly in the name of protecting the people of the Empire? Could he dare do the opposite, back away from Fadrix and leave the secrets in that cavern, the secrets that could potentially save the entire Empire, to a man who still thought the Lord Ruler would return to save his people? He wasn't ready to decide. For now, he was determined to exhaust every other option. Anything that would keep him from needing to invade the city. That included besieging the city to make Yeoman more pliant. That also included sneaking Vin into the storage cavern. Her reports indicated that the building was very heavily guarded. She wasn't certain if she could get into it on an ordinary night. However, during a ball, defenses might be more porous. It would be the perfect time to try to get a glimpse at what was hidden in that cavern. Assuming Yeoman hasn't simply removed the Lord Ruler's last inscription, Elland thought, or that there was even something there in the first place. Yet there was a chance. The Lord Ruler's final message, the last bit of help he had left for his people. If Elland could find a way to get that help without breaking his way into the city, killing thousands, he would take it. Eventually, the men finished with their reports, and Elland dismissed them. Ham went quickly, wanting to get in on a morning sparring session. Set was gone a few moments later, carried back to his own tent. Dumu, however, lingered. It was sometimes hard to remember just how young Dumu was, barely older than Elland himself. The balding scalp and numerous scars made the man look much older than he was, as did the still visible effects of his extended illness. Dumu was hesitant about something. Elland waited, and finally the man dropped his eyes, looking embarrassed.
"Your Majesty," he said, "I feel that I must ask to be released from my post as general."
"And why do you say that?" Elland asked carefully.
"I don't think I'm worthy of the position anymore."
Elland frowned.
"Only a man trusted by the survivor should command in this army, my lord," Dumu said.
"I'm sure that he does trust you, Dumu."
Dumu shook his head.
"Then why did he give me the sickness? Why pick me, of all the men in the army?"
"I've told you it was random luck, Dumu."
"My lord," Dumu said, "I hate to disagree, but we both know that isn't true. After all, you were the one who pointed out that those who fell sick did so at Kelsier's will."
Elland paused.
"I did?"
Dumu nodded.
"On that morning when we exposed our army to the mists, you shouted out for them to remember that Kelsier is the lord of the mists, and that the sickness must, therefore, be his will. I think you were right. The survivor is lord of the mists. He proclaimed it so himself during the nights before he died. He's behind the sickness, my lord. I know he is. He saw those who lacked faith, and he cursed them."
"That isn't what I meant, Dumu," Elland said. "I was implying that Kelsier wanted us to suffer this setback, but not that he was targeting specific individuals."
"Either way, my lord, you said the words."
Elland waved his hand dismissively.
"Then how do you explain the strange numbers, my lord?" Dumu asked.
"I'm not sure," Elland said. "I'll admit that the number of people who fell sick does produce an odd statistic, but that doesn't say anything about you specifically, Dumu."
"I don't mean that number, my lord," Dumu said, still looking down. "I mean the number who remained sick while the others recovered."
Elland paused.
"Wait, what is this?"
"Haven't you heard, my lord?" Dumu asked, in the quiet tent. "The scribes have been talking about it, and it's gotten around to the army. I don't think that most of them understand the numbers and such, but they understand that something strange is happening."
"What numbers?" Elland asked.
5,000 people got taken by the sickness, my lord," Dumu said.
Exactly 16% of the army, Elland thought.
"Of those, some 500 died," Dumu said. "Of those remaining, almost everyone recovered in one day."
"But some didn't," Elland said, "like you."
"Like me," Dumu said softly. 327 of us remained sick when the others got better."
"So?" Elland asked.
"That's exactly 1/16 of those who fell to the sickness, my lord," Dumu said. "And we stayed sick exactly 16 days, to the hour."
The tent flap rustled quietly in the breeze. Elland fell quiet, and couldn't completely suppress a shiver.
"Coincidence," he finally said. "Statisticians looking for connections can always find odd coincidences and statistical anomalies if they try hard enough."
"This doesn't seem like a simple anomaly, my lord," Dumu said. "It's precise. The same number keeps showing up over and over. 16.
Elland shook his head.
"Even if it does, Dumu, it doesn't mean anything. It's just a number.
It's the number of months the survivor spent in the pits of Hatsin, Demu said.
Coincidence.
It's how old Lady Vin was when she became Mistborn.
Again coincidence, Elend said.
There seem to be an awful lot of coincidences related to this, my lord, Demu said.
Elend frowned, folding his arms. Demu was right on that point.
My denials are getting us nowhere. I need to know what people are thinking, not just contradict them.
All right, Demu, Elend said. Let's say that none of these things are coincidences. You seem to have a theory of what they mean.
It's what I said earlier, my lord, Demu said. The mists are of the survivor. They take certain people and kill them. Others of us they make sick, leaving the number 16 as a proof that he really was behind the event. So therefore the people who grow the most sick are the ones who have displeased him the most.
Well, except for the ones who died from the sickness, Elend noted.
True, Demu said, looking up. So, maybe there's hope for me.
That wasn't supposed to be a comforting comment, Demu. I still don't accept all of this. Perhaps there are oddities, but your interpretation is based on speculation. Why would the survivor be displeased with you? You're one of his most faithful priests.
I took the position for myself, my lord, Demu said. He didn't choose me. I just started teaching what I'd seen, and people listened to me. That must be what I did to offend him. If he'd wanted that from me, he'd have chosen me when he was alive, don't you think?
I don't think the survivor cared much about this when he was alive, Elend thought. He just wanted to stir up enough anger in the Ska that they would rebel.
Demu, Elend said. You know that the survivor didn't organize this religion when he was alive. Only men and women like you, those who looked toward his teachings after he died, have been able to build up a community of the faithful.
True, Demu said. But he did appear to some people after his death. I wasn't one of those people.
He didn't appear to anyone, Elend said. That was Orsir the Chondra wearing his body. You know that, Demu.
Yes, Demu said. But that Chondra acted at the survivor's request, and I wasn't on the list to get visited.
Elend laid a hand on Demu's shoulder, looking in the man's eyes. He had seen the general, worn and grizzled beyond his age, determinedly stare down a savage coloss a full 5 feet taller than he was. Demu was not a weak man, either in body or in faith.
Demu, Elend said. I mean this in the kindest way, but your self-pity is getting in the way. If these mists took you, then we need to use that as proof that their effects have nothing to do with Kelsier's displeasure. We don't have time for you to question yourself right now. We both know you're twice as devoted as any other man in this army.
Demu flushed.
Think about it, Elend said, giving Demu a little extra alimentic shove in the emotions. In you, we have obvious proof that a person's faithfulness has nothing to do with whether or not they're taken by the mists. So rather than letting you mope, we need to move on and find the real reason the mists are behaving as they are.
Demu stood for a moment, then finally nodded.
Perhaps you're right, my lord. Maybe I'm jumping to conclusions.
Elend smiled. Then he paused, thinking about his own words. Obvious proof that a person's faithfulness has nothing to do with whether they're taken by the mists. It wasn't exactly true. Demu was one of the strongest believers in the camp. What of the others who had been sick as long as he? Had they been, perhaps, men of extreme faith as well? Elend opened his mouth to ask the question of Demu. That was when the shouting started.